Okay, sorry. So Anna Maria, you. So how much does the project cost?
That's a very nice question. As of today, 4 billions. Billions, with a B. Yeah, that's the current price. So, and some are missing. No, not all we have in the pocket.
All right. So, Avanish Basu Sharma from NICEF. Can you elaborate a bit more on why people and mice will lose their cognitive capabilities when they travel to Mars?
We have no idea. What has been simply done is that you know that you are exposed to radiation, and so you study what are various possible effects. The first obvious that people thought of was cancer, and that was studied from the beginning. Then another one that people started worrying about was vision, cataract. And indeed, there is a loss of vision because of cataract. And basically, someone simply tried to see what if there was any effect on the cognitive capabilities. You have a trained mouse that has learned to get the food by pushing a certain button. And you see that after exposure to a typical radiation mix like you get in a long space trip, this is substantially diminished. So it's a fact, let's say. Now, why? That's exactly one of the things that one wants to study now, and study much more in detail. It was a surprise. It's quite recent, this result. And now it has to be studied, what goes on. So the net answer is no idea, and this is something that will be studied in the coming years.
So following up on that, so the astronauts that live for like a year in the ISS station, I guess they receive way less radiation then,
yes,
right?
Yes, it is substantially less. It's a low orbit around the Earth. The Earth has a nice magnetic field, mm-hmm. and things like that. So I had a comparison. It's substantially lower. Let's see if I can get there in less than. Oops, no, I went too far actually. Yeah. So you see, there's two orders of magnitude. So it's substantially okay. Less. Is not a bit less. It's substantially less. So yeah, the ISS is relatively low on the scale of this of these things.
So, all right, thank you.
But still, radiation is an issue. The crews of airplanes which travel the polar route are exposed to substantial radiation levels as compared to those who don't, and they actually rotate which crews actually fly the polar route. So it's also, you know, if you start integrating many flights back and forth, it starts to be significant. There were studies which were done and were highly non-encouraged by airlines, because of course they don't want to have to pay damages to their employees if they develop illnesses. So people which were doing these studies did encounter quite some difficulties loading instrumentation on the planes and so on. Sure. But it is not negligible.
So possible applications for protective gear could be used on Earth as well, not only out there in space.
Yeah, so there are many things that you can do. There are shieldings, and the shielding, of course, is heavy, so you should not bring it. Yet, there are things that you must carry, for example, water. And so, if you deliberately place water in a strategic way in a place where the astronauts are, you help. if you moreover monitor the radiation levels, you know that they vary substantially depending on many factors, and so you can actually say, okay, when the radiation levels go above a certain level, you retire in a specially designed area of the spaceship where you have additional shielding during the additional radiation. Last but a bit more far-fetched, there seems to be hints that hibernated small animals suffer much less severe damages. Of course, hibernating humans is not quite a developed technology, but this is one of the things that are being studied. It's an amazing program. There's many, many, many things that one can try to do, and our counterpart at ESA is a lady which runs the program for the humans to go to Mars, because that's the thing. I mean, at this moment, one of the goals of the main space agencies is to bring astronauts to Mars, but it's not so trivial. But,
all right, thank you.
Hi, I'm Eric. I'm interested in accelerator technology and mm-hmm. stuff. So I guess a few questions. So did you mention like the maximum beam energy you're going to be able to get? And also, like, I'm assuming you're not going to run at that all the time. So like what your plans are for?
So the maximum energy is in the tens of GeVs. It's not very high. It's focused on the energy that you need to optimally produce the radioactive isotopes and to optimally produce the antiprotons. What the focus here is the intensity. So as compared, for example, to the magnets which are developed for CERN, the development is completely different. So if you have some experience, in accelerator design, and you look at the typical cycle at CERN, you have that the magnets go to a very high field, extremely high, very slowly in reality. And then they sit there because we follow the energy for hours, and then you bring them down again with a slow process. This will happen at 50 hertz in the fair accelerator. It will be continuously going up and down, up to the maximum, down to the maximum. So you are throwing bullets one after the other, because you have to integrate the maximum number of particles at the end of your. And so you can imagine that the type of optimization between a magnet that has to go as high as possible, but it can take as long as you need and then sits there, is completely different from a system in which you want to go up and down like crazy all the time. So this is, in fact, a similar type of magnets that, like the ones which we are using, are being thought for the muon collider, if it will ever appear. That would have the same type of needs. If you ever make a muon collider, you need, again, fast ramping. So you see, these machines on a drawing all look the same, and in reality they are completely different as type of optimization. The other part of the question,
I was going to ask about like the magnets and stuff. You answered it, but okay. Also, funny enough, I am planning on building a muon collider, so.
So so come and study our fast ramping magnets, because that's exactly what you need, which is very different as a type of magnet as one of those for the LHC, for example. It's completely different. I think you are first. Yeah.
seeing this slide, I was wondering how can the radiation on the moon can be so close to the radiation on the ISS, because the moon has no magnetic field and.
It is a bit higher, huh?
It is still a factor. But why? Because is the moon also protected by Earth magnetic field?
No. A little bit probably. It is significantly lower than Mars. Yes. I have to think about it. I think. If you are at the Marsala tonight, I will think about because normally what we are always looking is ISS versus Mars, because and the ISS people have been a long time and so on, and so that's a study case, because that you have people who have been there for very extended periods of time, so you know what has happened, but the lunar colony, I have to think about it.
And I had another little question. Do you expect to discover new elements or anything with this new facility?
The further new elements. The official answer is no, absolutely not. The real answer is that we are actually building a special thing that would allow that, but we are not telling our. No, no one tells the German ministry, please, because we are not telling them. The next two elements are still possible to be, if you look. Where are they? If you look at the table. Just give me a second, because before I was going too fast and then I was getting in trouble. Yeah. So this is the last one, which was discovered in Dubna, organesium. So you can start the new line, and at least the next two are within reasonable reach. Now, the big problem is that you need something that in this moment is in short supply, which is worldwide cooperation. Because each one of the various parts which play a role in that discovery is a quasi-monopoly of a different country. The target material comes typically from Oak Ridge. It's basically the place which can make it. The material which is used to produce the beam is almost exclusively made in Russia, in Russian reactors. And so you can see, and the accelerator would be in Germany. So, okay, in this moment, the geopolitics of this measurement doesn't look too good. So it might take a while before this actually can take place, just because of world cooperation that in this moment is really under stress. So a priori, yes, and also something that we would be prepared to work on. In practice, I can see quite a few years before something happens. And also, by the way, the competition are other laboratories which have the same problem. I mean, you really need the three players, and at the moment, it's very hard to imagine. So it's not an easy time for this type of measurement. Actually, we have a reserve for the one part, which is the beam production, which would keep us going for a couple of years more, which would not be enough for that, and then it's really a problem.
Yes. So there was this Kironova multi-messenger event that confirmed, I think, the rapid process hypothesis. And
yeah.
Those ones, if I understand correctly, are very, very outside of the...
Oh, of yeah. The these, on this plot, they are very far. If you would give me time, I have a beautiful simulation in which you see the isotopes that you create in such an event, which make a blob around here and then progressively decay to the left, finally arrive, because you create of quite obviously highly neutron-rich, unstable elements, and then they travel left towards stability, going to populate the right amounts of... This is one of the things that have determined the way the overall thing has been designed. Let's go to the other. Poof. To gain some patience. Patience. Oops. Here, what you do, you go produce exactly these families here so that you can follow the path of the art process and measure the various chains of decays that define then the final populations of the different families. So this is a whole experimental program. It's not an experiment. It will it needs to address a number of different key nuclei and then follow what the
I thought that was very impossible to do, but it sounds like people are actually thinking that it is realistic to.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It won't take weeks, it takes years, but you've seen from, I hope that one of the things that you have realized from the various talks here in these days is that experimenters are very patient. I mean, from the Higgs that took from the paper to the discovery a certain number of decades to all of this. There is a certain level of patience which is necessary in these things. So, yeah, it is something that is planned and it will take a couple of decades from now, but it will be done. Back there.
Christian Döring. I don't know much about accelerators, so I don't know if this question makes sense, but...
I don't know.
On your picture of...
Questions always make sense. Remember this. Questions always make sense. The answers are more difficult.
On the picture of your of the accelerator, of the building what you built, the accelerator side was not a cycle, but it's like...
Of course. And very good eye, very important. Yes, accelerators are not circles. And they are not circles because of reasons. You saw, for example, another one at some point before, which was actually a triangle. Because in another talk, not in mine. Why? Because you need the curved sections to keep the particles going around. So that's where you bend them. But also you need to do a lot to the particles. You need to accelerate them. That's a simple thing. So you have normally a straight section where you have the cavities to accelerate. But you need to do many things. For example, here you need a lot of straight sections because of the problem of the high intensity. For high intensity, then you need to cooling. When you hear the word cooling of a beam, means reducing the transverse components and the spread of the beam. You reduce the size, but not the size in physical space, the size in momentum space. So that's the cooling. so that you, because what is the problem if you accelerate extremely high intensity of nuclei? You have, of course, brought your vacuum to a fantastic value because you know that the cross-section of your nuclei with any residual gas is extremely high. They are enormous, the cross-sections. Yet, at some point, one of your nuclei will have a transverse component such that it will touch somewhere. And that's a catastrophe, because what does it do? It produces additional shower that will then hit in all sorts of places and create evaporation from the walls into your vacuum, and in no time your whole beam will be lost. And it's a catastrophe. So you have to constantly, patiently reduce the size and constantly, patiently take away the particles which are still too far from the, what you want. So you see, again, there are certain main goals. Here is intensity, and for example, and that determines considerable differences in the overall. If you want, what you want is maximum energy. What you want is to put as many of the highest possible field dipoles as possible so that you maximize the integral field around your machine. So your machine will look circular, more circular. Here is not the energy the goal. Actually, you could fit in that tunnel a machine four times higher energy. This is not that's not the point. The point is the intensity. So yes, yeah, you have a good eye. It is not circular. It's there's a lot of straight sections.
Thank you.
Hello, Avnasia Gelopoulou. You mentioned the cost of electricity, and I was wondering if the sustainability of the project has been taken somehow into account. Like, for example, at CERN, I know that they use the warm water from the cooling to heat up the areas around CERN, and I think maybe this will become even more relevant in the next years.
It becomes more and more relevant, and one tries all sorts of things, including there are now developments using artificial intelligences. And the problem is that a thing like this has a number of operational parameters which is enormous. And so it ought to optimize it is very complicated because all these parameters play a role and you have thousands of them. And so it's an ideal place where to apply machine learning to optimize the use and reduce power wherever is not indispensable in that moment of the process. And that is one of the things that one wants to do. Using the water to warm, we have looked, it's not very efficient because the water, the cooling water is a relatively low temperature. So it doesn't help very much. It's not the cycle that you get is not terribly efficient. We use the water that cools computers, for example, for some of these purposes. But one is desperately looking everywhere where you can find ways to save on energy, because all accelerator laboratories have the same problem, that power is getting extremely expensive, and try to find all possible measures, but it's not there's not a single magic thing that saves a lot. There are.
Thank you,
Luisa. One back there. No, there's still two in the back before.
Just a short. Oh, sorry. You can.
Luisa.
Can I?
Okay.
Okay. Gabor Bolosha. Yes. Just a short technical question. What is the expected luminosity of the antiproton beam experiment? Do you know?
In terms of luminosity, I have to check it. I would hate to quote a number by heart. I have to check the number. It's it uses a jet target so it is a relatively high luminosity. It's not a collider mode. Mm. It's a quasi fixed target, and I have it written somewhere, but I don't remember it by heart. I would not want to give you a funny number. I'll check it.
Thank you,
Luisa.
Thank you. One is a comment. While you were answering, I googled, and the question concerning the lunar colony is indeed due to the magnetic field of the Earth, because the International Space Station is at a height of only 400 kilometers as compared to 400,000 kilometers for the Moon. So it's the Earth magnetic field that helps, okay, as compared with the Moon colony radiation, where you get all the cosmic rays. The question concerns the hadron therapy. So the birthplace is GSI for a given type of hadron therapy. I would like to know, you don't treat patients in the lab, but in given hospitals, but do you have a sort of interaction, scientific interaction, I mean, with the hospitals? And finally, I don't understand the flash therapy. I know that experimentally it seems to be more advantages, but why, I don't understand. Can you comment?
In order, the collaboration with hospitals is fundamental, and we collaborate with all those centers which have patients. We collaborate with, of course, Heidelberg, which is somehow our clone, but we collaborate a lot with Pavia, the CNAO, with Medaustron in Vienna, and also with some American clinics. In the United States, they don't have carbon therapy, they only do proton, not because they don't like it, but because the insurance companies don't like it and don't pay for the treatment. So it's again economics getting into the way of medicine, but yes, it is very important, because whatever developments we have finally are meant for quasi immediate translation to the patients. What are now the main lines of development of the therapy? There's two that, by the way, are largely also combined. One is the immunology, which is to stimulate also the immune response that comes from your own body after the therapy, which is extremely promising. And it is something that we developed a lot also together with TRON, which is it's a name that you probably never heard, but it's the research branch of BioNTech, the people of the vaccine in mind. The other direction, which is the flash, and flash means a very fast irradiation. To give you a measure, typical irradiation times are of the order of 1 to 2 minutes. Flash means hundreds of milliseconds or less, so it's more than two orders of magnitude faster. And there is evidence, especially from in other areas, not with this type of with ions, that the damage to the healthy tissues is substantially lower. Now you might want to say, why do you need the development? Why don't you just do it then? It's not so trivial, because think of a moment how the hadron therapy is done. You set the depth with a certain energy, then you move around with magnets your beam, then you change the energy, and then you move again, and then change the energy. Changing the energy in particular, the accelerators don't change so fast the energy. It's especially extracted energy. So it is basically impossible to do the classic hadron therapy in flash mode. So some of our guys had a brilliant idea to do it completely different. You do it in one shot using a degrader that one can create patient by patient by simulation and 3D printing, and you create a specific degrader that will distribute the and will slow in a differential way the particles in the bunch that you are sending, so that they will hit in the proper depth and spread. And so that's why it is it was a non-trivial development, because instead of moving your beam back and forth and then changing the energy and so on, you send one shot and you have a 3D printed degrader designed for that patient that will make it go in the right place. So that's why it's complicated and it's still a development project, but that's the idea. And so that's what is being done. There, why it is much less damaging for the healthy tissues, again, we have no idea. I mean, this is something that we try to understand, but it's very complex. Most of these developments are somehow driven by the results, rather than driven by a although we try, Marco Durante, who runs this program, has the full vertical program. They have the simulations, then they have the studies cell by cell of the irradiation and the effects, and then blah, blah, blah. But some of these effects are really difficult to understand. They're very complex, and then you find that the evidence is that it works, so you want to use it. But last.
I have one short remark about the lunar colony.
Yeah?
There's a claim that if you put your colony in the moon and not on the moon, that is, you dig and you go down, then you receive even less radiation than the Earth.
Well, what you do, what we do is actually to study exactly these type of things. You've seen this picture with the Mars soil, I mean, simulated. This was a project which was called Rossini, in which one would study the use of Mars, of Mars sand as a shielding, which works very well. So
the point is that cosmic rays produce lots of pions in our atmosphere, which produce lots of muons, which reach the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now on the moon, the pions
are not given the time
to make muons; they are absorbed immediately.
Yeah, yeah, because you stop them with an hadronic interaction.
So when you go down,
don't let them decay.
Yes, that's
correct.
Radiation. And another remark is actually that people who live high in the mountains are much more resistant against radiation than people who are at sea level, like myself.
I must say,
so
it's
a more complicated question.
It is the low radiation dose response of live beings is a very complicated thing. There are places, there is, for example, a famous beach town in Brazil where the level of radiation is extremely high. People still live there. So in Finland, the radiation levels are because it depends on the minerals that you have, apart from the height, that is the other factor. But it's also at sea level. If you are in Finland versus the Netherlands, you get a lot more radiation because the rocks are. And in particular, there is a famous beach in Brazil, which is basically radioactive, and people still go sunbath. So it's the low level radiation effects are very complex too.
The question is there whether it's linear or not, at very low energies. You can actually if you get just a little bit of radiation, you get immune and your system can cure itself. But these are very difficult questions, I think.
Yeah. Let's say, shockingly enough, most of our epidemiological understanding of high radiation doses is from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, still. Because in the end, people which have, populations which have irradiated at high levels, there's not that many. So that is still one of the main sources. And of course, it's difficult to make experiments because if you would use human beings,
So do you advise us to avoid the Copacabana?
No, it's not Copacabana. Oh, okay, it's a different one. I can tell you which one. I have it on a slide that I didn't use. No, Copacabana's fine. Copacabana you might want to avoid for other reasons. But I think you are... Yes?
Yeah. Anastasia Maluk, maybe the last question. Let's say if someone wants to get a specific isotope at FAIR, is it, or for example, far from the stability island where it's really hard to get it, is it always searching for a specific beam and specific target, or are there any other like experimental methods to get?
You have to have a specific beam. Okay, depends on exactly how far you are from the ordinary. Ordinary are cheap, and you get them whatever you do. If you, for example, would want to go to the island of stability up there, there it becomes extremely difficult because there are two problems. One is the Z, but the other problem is the N. The island of stability is off the main track towards high neutron density, the numbers, and it is very difficult to put together so many neutrons. So it is a direction of work that requires, again, developing specific beams and specific targets. It's not something that you just get. If you what you tend to get is to go up along the line, but that's not the direction of the stability island, which is further out to the right. And to put more neutrons in is not so trivial. I'm afraid.
I'd like to thank the speaker again for answering all the questions. And it's a day today. Thanks, everybody.